When you're in the world of security, there's a level of secrecy, even in, you know, day to day or with your family, that you can't speak about. I am happy to work in the shadows. I am happy to be the person behind the scenes that helps all the groups realize this is why we need to play together. It's for the benefit for our organization. Security is a great marketing tool, especially if you look at the landscape that we have today, to have that cohesive message about what your organization's trying to accomplish for security. I also think we're an enabler in the sense that we can help shape business opportunities. If we know what our company's wanting to do down the line, we can give guidance up front from security of, okay, here's a money pit, right? Maybe with the road you want to go down, or here's how you would shape this opportunity that would benefit us best as an organization.
Welcome to Secure Access with John Dillard, your front door to the future of compliance, security, and tech. Powered by Sign-In Solutions, we bring you bold conversations with industry leaders who are shaping how organizations protect people, data, and spaces. If you're serious about smarter, safer access, you're in the right place. Let's dive in.
Welcome. Thank you. It's exciting to have you. I think, when's the first time that we met? I think it was probably 6 or 7 years ago, probably in NCMS.
Yeah, I think so. If not a little bit longer than that.
My gosh. And at the time, I don't even know what company we were with. I mean, you've been through so many M&As. I'm not, it might have been when you were still at SOCI. Does that maybe track?
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm excited to have you here.
I guess this is
going to be the Halloween episode.
Yeah, I mean, if only I sat in the room with more of my festive decorations.
I know. Are you doing anything fun? Is Halloween like a big deal in your household? Or
it is. It is a huge deal. Every room in my house is a different theme, and we host an annual costume party. It's indoors, outdoors, lots of activities, good food, and fun. So we have that this upcoming weekend.
Awesome. My youngest child graduated, and so we have no children in the house. Everyone's in college. And so this is the first Halloween that we want to have kids. And so we're a little befuddled as to how to handle Halloween. It's very different when you don't have kids around.
I understand that. I have four teenagers, and my oldest is getting ready to go to college next year. So it's kind of like my last with them all home, right? So I'm trying to do all the big things before they start leaving me.
Exactly. You find yourself cramming in as many special things as you possibly can. And then you start to realize it's time for them to go. At least if that was the case for me. This is the first Halloween where we haven't had any kids in the house. But yes. Well, hopefully this episode won't be that scary.
I think it'll
keep it friendly. Sometimes the episodes are scary, but this one is going to be delightful. It's not going to be a scary Halloween episode, in part because you have a neat background. It's not scary at all. I was refreshing myself on your journey a little bit. I want to ask you lots of questions about it. BAE, SOCI, Advantis, Kinetic, Maximus. It's a great hit list. I always ask the first question here to understand how you got started in the first place. Like, what was the thing that got you into, because I think you started your career in straight HR, right?
That's correct.
What happened that caused the leap to occur?
Yeah. So I was up in Burlington, Vermont, right after college. I went to school right outside of Boston, and I was working at a hotel doing HR activities. And I decided, hey, it'd be fun if I just picked up and moved to Northern Virginia. So I did. And upon doing so, I got myself in another HR opportunity and wasn't overly satisfied. So I said, what else is out there? So I reached out to a staffing company, and they placed me at BAE Systems. And that was the beginning of my career in security.
Oh, wow. So staffing, that's the first time I've heard a staffing placement.
They said, you know, you've got an administrative background. You're able to do kind of A, B, and C. You know, we think you'll be great. And I said, okay, well, I don't know much about security. And then I quickly learned within a week or so of being there, there was a lot of alignment between the security expectations and human resources. You know, it's care and feeding for your personnel. It's a lot of taking care of your company and organization. So it clicked for me rather quickly. I was very fortunate to have great leaders in that opportunity, where it went from a temporary position till I was hired on full time and stayed there for several years.
Incredible. And yeah. I guess looking back, what was most different about security then when you first entered compared to how you view the industry now?
Yeah. So I think it was a different world for me, in the sense is I was never military, right? I never worked in any government position. So it was a new world of kind of like the things you don't hear about, right? And so the aspect of the job where it had that level of excitement to learn more was really the different part about it. And I think, you know, knowing I was also a communications major. So I do like to share and talk and be able to teach other folks about what's going on. But when you're in the world of security, there's a level of secrecy, even in, you know, day to day or with your family, that you can't speak about. And so I think that was the largest challenge for me, is getting into a profession where you can't, you know, talk about every aspect of it and be excited for all the things that you were accomplishing and in the missions that you were supporting, and kind of having to say, yeah, I have a cool job, and leave it at that, right? And I think that was the biggest difference for me overall, just, you know, from a personal level, is how do you bring yourself into a lifestyle where you really are focusing truly on missions, on individuals, on things larger than yourself that you are super excited to be doing and be a part of.
Yeah, amazing. And BAE, in terms of that's obviously, this is British airspace. So this is a foreign company doing business in the United States. So you have a little bit of additional complexity because it's a FOCA company. What was it like working at BAE, that big aerospace company that's under the radar for a lot of folks?
It was. I was in their information technology kind of pillar within the organization. So I wasn't necessarily over with some of the manufacturing and stuff that they did at other locations. And the arm that I was in at BAE also had some acquisitions as a part of it. So that was new in my career. I wasn't really involved in those quite yet, but we were doing a lot of the support, the CETA work for some of the agencies. So it was really exciting. And it expanded into Intel when I was there as well. They brought in some great leaders that really diversified the portfolio and pivoted where the organization was going. But yeah, I definitely picked a challenge of my first company to work for, to be under FOCI, which was that additional level of understanding of the, you need to collaborate, but here's your parameters in doing so, right? And being able to understand that as security professionals, what our expectations were of leadership, but also our restrictions. And working at any FOCI company, let alone BAE, where there was multiple layers, multiple organizations kind of a part of it, was a strong learning curve. Again, I'll go back to the fact that I had great leadership at the time. I had seasoned professionals that I was able to lean on, look up to. They took all my questions in great stride, and they put me through a lot of training and certifications where it really kind of continued my journey in security and my wanting to understand all the aspects, all the pillars, and really kind of throw myself into everything that I possibly could.
Excellent. And for those, because we have a fair number of commercial listeners, FOCI, foreign ownership, control, and influence. So
yeah,
which is a fun extra layer of work to do for a lot of folks who are in security. So what was the switch to, by the way, I keep calling SOCI, I've always called it SOCI, I'll probably never stop. That's probably not what they say. Is it SOSI? Is it SOCI? What's the term of art?
Well, depends on who you asked within the organization. It was, a lot of people did call it SOCI. SOS International was another one that got thrown out there, SOSI. I mean, there wasn't really a consistent way. I think if you asked the leadership, yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, and I actually wound up at SOCI through an acquisition. I was at Viken Corporation for almost 10 years. So, you know, kind of how I pivoted from BAE to Viken was one of our small business partners that we worked with within BAE systems. So as we were expanding into intelligence, into some of the other platforms, I kind of wound up over there.
Got it. Excellent. So via acquisition. And that's been a theme for you. I mean, I'm looking across your background. Were there any changes for you that were not driven by merger position? Which
one? There's been two. So my leap over to Advantis was one, not through an acquisition. It was through kind of wanting to continue to expand myself within the community and put another challenge on my plate. Advantis was multiple acquisitions as well. And from there, I went to Kinetic, which was, I acquired Advantis. And then when I left Kinetic, I went over to Maximus. And that was another move that was not an acquisition.
Got it. Yeah, exactly. And of course, I think, and I met you when you were at SOCI, then we got to know each other a bit better when you were at Maximus, because they were a customer of ThreatSwitch, which is now Sign-In Solutions. So,
correct. Yeah. And I actually also brought Sign-In Solutions to Advantis as well.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a great product. How can we not?
Awesome. Let's leave the mergers and acquisitions aside for a second, because I want to come back and just spend time on that, because I think it's super interesting for a lot of folks who are going through it or have gone through it. For the jobs that you changed intentionally, what was the driver for you? I mean, if you think about your career advancement as a security professional and a security leader, what were the drivers that really provoked some of those changes?
Yeah, well, I think if you kind of look at the world of security when I started off that 22 years ago, it was a different landscape, right? I mean, we had more of that physical presence, more on-site security was required. It wasn't necessarily navigating through the complexities of where we are with today's landscape. So I think, you know, looking at where the evolution of security has been over the last 22 years, it kind of naturally took me on my journey. I'll also say I wove in motherhood within my journey as well. So I wanted to prioritize not only my career and give myself an opportunity where I could still feel challenged, but also give myself the availability to be present for my children and kind of that portion of my life. Find that balance, right? Which is always very hard. And that was kind of what drove some of my navigation to different opportunities. But I'll say in the forefront, really, you know, looking to continue to learn. I felt like anytime I went to an organization, it was either a learning journey for myself or it was a transformation for the company. So I was there for a purpose. They needed something. They needed assistance to develop the program, mature their program, kind of help bring that cohesive nature to what they were doing. Once I accomplished it and had a team that I was able to kind of work with and bring up to speed, it was like, okay, what's next, right? And if the company itself didn't have any intention to maybe grow more or develop there, I was like, that's what drove me to look for a change. I was able to find it in some other companies to continue that for myself.
Awesome. That makes sense. Well, on the motherhood point, I would love to pull that thread just a little bit because I've had a number of podcast guests. Trisha Stokes comes to mind. I've always been impressed in the industrial security community. Number one, for those who don't know this, there are actually rather a lot of women in industrial security, more than you might expect, more than in commercial security. There are a lot of these stories of exceptional women in leadership who, in some cases, you know, chief security officer, senior VP of security, they are very senior level executives who had to work through that same thing that you described, which is how do you balance motherhood? I think there are a lot of folks who are just curious what your advice would be, having done it and obviously done it successfully. What are a couple of lessons for the folks who might be facing the same decision or trying to figure out how to make it work?
Yeah, I would say transparency with your organization. I think, you know, any organization, when they're bringing in talent to the company, they want to know what is it going to do for me, right? So if you go to an organization and you let them know openly where you are at with your part of your life, I think it helps then develop what does it look like for you within that organization. So the expectations up front of what you're looking for yourself and then what the company is looking for and seeing if you can make that balance. I was very fortunate to have the opportunity to have options when I was trying to navigate my motherhood journey, which was helpful for myself that I didn't feel like I didn't have the opportunity to look elsewhere to bring flexibility to my schedule, but really just talking with your leadership. And then I think it goes back to who you are as an individual. Are you able to have a security in and of itself is abnormal hours, right? It's not your typical, you know, 9-to-5 job where you can clock in and clock out. And being able to fit that into your lifestyle as well and know, you know, if I need to wake up at 4 a.m. and tackle something to take off a little bit of time to do something in my motherhood responsibilities and then jump right back in. Like, right, it's being able to discipline yourself enough to do so. I'll also say what kind of helped me out of that is I was with companies long before COVID or remote work was a thing that were remote, that were in multiple locations where I had to navigate travel and deal with this well in advance. So I think when it became a challenge for everybody during the COVID times to bring yourself to how do I impact others? How do I navigate a team? I had been already doing that for quite some time. So it wasn't as much of a shock for myself to be able to keep going with my responsibilities in that position. Self-discipline is another one to be able to bring to the table if you're looking for that flexibility.
Excellent. Excellent. Awesome story. When across your career, and we're going to talk a little bit about cross-disciplinary security in a second, but I am super curious. I mean, you said how different it was when you started compared to where it is now. Were there points along this journey where you really had to pivot hard? And, you know, I've heard a lot of folks say they had to really shift hard into cyber. What were the two or three key moments that where you really had to retool because of how security was changing?
Yeah. So I think for me, it was that, right? When I first joined, you know, you had multiple people that led your IT, that led your physical security, that you had different pockets of those pillars that you worked with to collaborate. I think it didn't take very long to see that there is multiple complex frameworks that any organization is trying to meet, right? Whether it touches security or not. So it became very clear to me that there was things that I didn't know, but it pertained to how I was able to give my feedback to leadership, to a company, to understand the prioritization of certain things. And I think, you know, cyber was one of them, right? I mean, it became very clear you needed to understand cybersecurity. You needed to understand the NIST. You needed to understand the FAR and DFAR. And I'll say in my career at BAE, I had a leader that threw me into proposal work. So that was another moment where I was like, whoa, what's going on here, right? It wasn't just, you know, processing SF-86s or getting folks on site or briefing them. It was now looking at it from a more strategic point of view. And that was another pivotal point for me is like, as you're reading those RFPs, RFIs, getting to know all of the strategy the company's going for, it really put a different lens on my eyes because there were things that I was not necessarily tracking early in my career that by being thrown into BD and proposal development really set myself up going forward to want to pay attention to those other disciplines, to want to get the certifications or the training under my belt so I could have educated conversations with my counterparts. Doesn't mean I'm going to go do cybersecurity or information technology, but I know enough to have those conversations to bring in those other subject matter experts to enhance my program. And I think that that's been invaluable.
Excellent. Yeah, well, that tees up the next topic really nicely, which is, you know, and you and I talked about this a little bit in our pre-call, is just how multidisciplinary security has become and the challenges that places on professionals who are in the space. I'll put it to you. When I say that to you, I mean, security, and we've had lots of conversations on the podcast about how our terminology, even the terminology just doesn't make sense anymore. I mean, we put everybody in these buckets of physical, visitor management, cyber, infosec, industrial, and none of which really serves us very well. When I say multidisciplinary security, what does that mean to you? And why is that important?
Yeah, well, I think it's important because if you kind of look back at your mission statement, right? You know, I always go into any organization, like what is my personal mission statement and what is the company's mission statement and how do we bring it in? And it's really looking at to secure your organization, protect your assets, take care of your people, know your critical infrastructure, you know, personnel, all of the above. That's not just one group. If you're going to put together a productive risk management program, that is really every piece of your organization to come to the table with a piece of that puzzle. And to be able to understand that and accept that is really what starts you off for success with breaking down those silos, because it's an education piece. Whether you're coming into a company that's newly into defense or federal work, or you've been with one, or you're with a company that's been there for a while, but pivoting with the regulation landscape that's coming down the line with some of the changes that we've recently seen. Our job is to educate to then get back to our mission statements. What are we trying to do? So I think if you're looking at the multidisciplinary, it's really understanding the vital pieces that all of those parts to your company play into your program. And then elevating that up to your leadership team to see that security is everyone's business. It's not just our slogan statement that we like to say at conferences, right? It really is the underlying factor to be able to say, okay, we've got productive risk management, really, which is what security is, if you look at it. And so now how can we then operationalize ourselves to be able to reach our other goals? You want to give that confidence that security shouldn't be the issue. It should be what you have set in that groundwork to be able to allow everything else to go as needed.
Yeah, absolutely. What's the new skill set that you think is most important for people to be adding now? I mean, in terms of disciplines and it being multidisciplinary, what's the next new discipline that we need to be adding to that list that maybe we haven't been thinking about?
Yeah, well, I spend a lot of time with my legal team. I joke with them, you know, can I get an honorary certification? I think that that's been really the newest one that I've focused on recently because of, again, our regulatory landscape has changed. We have all these complex frameworks. How do they play with one another? How are they matrixed? How are we setting ourselves up? And then, you know, what is the risk appetite for the organization? But understanding the laws behind it, understanding that regulatory factor is really important because if we're making decisions for the company to meet our risk appetite, to again, go back and meet what we're trying to do from our mission statement, we have to understand that because I've not had a leader yet to date that said, well, what is actually required, right? That's what they want to know. What do we have to do? And then what is our business decision to navigate through that? So I'd say legal, cyber, definitely in the last several years as well has been one that I've focused into for myself.
Well, look, I mean, that's it, the conversations that I've had with folks, especially about insider threat and background check. I mean, that's, you know, where it obviously shows up. But because these things overlap so much, including in visitor management, I mean, our sponsor, the Sonnet Solutions, that's kind of where we live. And the kind of information you are able to collect on people, both before they are employees and even after they're employees, it's not that much of a technical challenge anymore. We know how to do it. And it seems like the difference between companies that figure it out and the ones that don't are the ones who have figured out the legal piece. And if I understand that, what kind of governance structures and authorities you need, what kind of permission you need from the employees, what you don't need. Has that been your experience? What other kinds of things does legal capability unlock for you as a security leader that perhaps people don't fully appreciate?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And you said it right. If you have that governance structure in place, it really does allow you to meet your requirements efficiently. You're able to bring in tools to support you. I think also the collaboration with legal and the understanding is the interpretation of information out there, to being able to have different perspectives and understanding. When I'm working with my legal team, and it's not just one individual, right? They are also diversified in themselves. You've got a legal team that deals with your cyber and intellectual property. You have your legal team that's contracts and compliance. So really understanding that it's not just a security problem where we need to tap into all the disciplines, right? And being able to have those other subject matter expertise. I think, you know, the other thing that legal is a great partner in is being able to break down those silos. They have been a great partner to me and most all organizations to bring that education piece, to bring that why behind we need to make certain decisions, or we need to bring in certain tools, or why we need to make decisions at certain timeframes for the organization, because it's going to, if we're looking at a five-year plan, really set us up for less headaches down the line if we start laying that framework now. And legal has been my true partner in that, because it's easier for them too, right? If we all have that, it's less we kind of have to deal with if something was to occur in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you've mentioned, obviously, legal. We've talked about cyber. We've talked about information. We've talked about traditional physical visitor management, FSO kinds of duties. If you think about all these different disciplines, in your experience, and it could be direct experience or what you've heard from other leaders, what's the one that seems to be hardest to pull into the fold? Like, which organization seems to be consistently the one, and not in a, you know, a negative way necessarily, it's just cultural differences in these professions that lead to, you know, different vocabulary, different styles. Which one's the hardest that people need to pay extra attention to?
So I think that the hardest for me has been the cybersecurity aspect. And the reason being for that is the lack of understanding of truly how your typical cybersecurity teams play into the federal landscape and into the expectations of what our customers in that world is looking for. If you look at the talent that most companies have, not everybody comes from DOD. Just like you said, right? We talk in our acronym soup and it's like, okay, I don't know what you're saying. We both have the same end goals. I think it's the way that we go about accomplishing it and that partnership that has been the biggest challenge for me. I've been in companies where it's been your traditional industrial security. All pillars have reported up and underneath me, and I've had subject matter experts to work with. I've been in other companies where it's been dispersed and we have to pull it together so I can show where our program is for our authorities that are looking at our industrial security program. I think when you have to take the time to build that trust. And it's been, again, the hardest kind of in cyber to build that trust to say, I recognize, you know, what you're doing, all the energy and efforts, but here's what I'm looking for. And how are we going to accomplish that? Because of that, I think lack of really full experience in the federal space or in the DOD space.
Yeah, makes sense.
It's different.
Yeah, it is. And I've heard that multiple times from multiple guests, is that the folks who go into cyber tend to be, they were hired or they built a career. They went and got that degree thinking they were going to do a certain kind of cyber thing. Yep. And it can be a little hard to break them out of those kind of activities into seeing the bigger picture, which tees up my next set of questions for you. What I really want to dig into, I mean, we've talked about the conceptual and logical reasons why these disciplines have to work together. The tricky part tends to be the humans. Yes. And getting the humans to work together effectively. How do you motivate people to think beyond these silos? Like, what has been effective for you, and how do you think about motivating people to work in a cross-disciplinary way?
Yeah, well, I think it's the ability to listen. I always call it my roadshow when I come into any new organization, whether it's been through M&A or it's been through just a professional move. You always want to give everyone the opportunity to share with you what they're doing. I think that's the biggest way to then break down those silos. If you're willing to listen, if you're willing to understand and not come in and right away want to make changes or right away say, this is what I need, this is how I do things, which demotivates people. If you have that time to allow to build those trust, build those relationships, it really does help facilitate that cross collaboration. I think everybody has, I go back to my personal mission statement, right? Everybody has their own. They're there for a reason. They want to accomplish something. They have their own leadership that they're trying to meet their goals for. So how are we able to recognize and reward our collaboration to show that it's going to bring us both value in the end? I have found that listening has been key. As you build those conversations and you're able to get that trust, you can have the conversations you need to have. You get more transparency. I also think what's been successful for me is, you know, I don't need my name on a project. I don't need security to be the reason things got done. I am happy to work in the shadows. I am happy to be the person behind the scenes that helps all the groups realize this is why we need to play together. It's really the benefit for our organization. And I think not needing that badge on my shoulder has helped because I'm not trying to take over anything. I don't ever want it to be when I'm going into an organization or I'm trying to get all these groups to collaborate that I'm there to disrupt what's going on. It's more to bring that understanding of, hey, we all need this, and here's how we're going to be able to come together. And I think when you start to empower individuals, you pick your own little security champions within these siloed groups and have them start to understand, and then they can share with their teams that already has that built trust. It just expands and allows for that collaboration to then naturally happen over time.
Excellent. How much is the professional jargon, or the fluency in these other disciplines? You think about cyber, you think about folks working the front desk in visitor management roles, or you think about the person who's that traditional FSO. How much effort do we need to be placing in getting them conversant in how the other groups talk so that they have some fluency in those things?
I think it's really important, actually. I think because when you go to any other group to have a conversation or have an ask, if you talk their language, they're going to be listening with open ears, right? If I go to my cyber folks and say, hey, I need some metrics on this, and not really be able to understand, like, hey, I need to understand what our risk is in this area. I need these metrics from this system. I know that we use this tool to be able to give it. If I've done my research and shown that the information they're providing me is valuable and I can speak their language, then I'm going to get that need fulfilled faster. I think, you know, we don't always emphasize our frontline folks the way we should. Our facilities team or whoever may be the group that is manning your front desk or is the front face of the organization, that is a really important role. I think the vernacular that we use or the terminology really shows anybody that's coming into our space who we are as a company. It's our brand. It's what we're known for. If we have folks not being able to speak the language to say you have senior government officials coming to your location and they don't fully understand what they're used to or the expectations, and it can show, what is my company really doing? What is this company doing in the space that they don't know how to handle it from the forefront? So I've always loved working with the folks that are the front lines. Visitor management or knowing who is in your space is extremely important. I think that if you are able to empower the individuals that you have in those positions with the understanding of the why, with the tools to be able to accomplish it, I mean, you're going to be foot in front of everybody else, right? If you do so, because I get more information from my receptionist or front desk team on a daily basis than I do from others, right? They're the eyes and ears. They tell me if things are going on and really are able to bring that back. So, John, overall, I think if we can break down what we're saying and then also take the time to learn others, it just goes back to furthering that communication. My kids always joke with me that I speak in the alphabet and I don't self-recognize it. So when I'm on calls or I'm giving presentations, I don't usually look directly at the chat, but that's what's going on. Like, okay, what does that mean? So you have to pause and be like, okay.
I mean, it's never ending. Even after many years in this space, I still, there are acronyms. I say them. I know what they mean. I have no idea what they stand for. Well, if you think about, I mean, across this leadership journey and getting people to work in a cross-disciplinary way, I mean, are there stories, and it could be a big win or something that you're particularly proud of, or conversely, a lesson possibly from a setback that you think is important? What's one story that stands out to you as something memorable that you'd be willing to share?
Oh, that is a really great question. I think for me, it's been... So again, going back to the fact that I'm not really I don't have a technical background, right? When you are dealing with professionals, that's really all they do. Technology is the thing that makes them so excited and be able to kind of wake up and see what they're able to do for the day. It was a strong realization to me several years ago that I really needed to understand that further. As excited as I get about industrial security, about the security that I have under my belt, so don't my other coworkers or professionals that I interact with. So it was, I would say, we were starting up insider threat programs long ago when it became mandated to us through Forming Change, I think it was, right? That we had to start to understand what we were able to do within our company landscape. I did not know enough from the technical side of what my ask was or what our company was already doing. And it was definitely a huge wake-up call for me to say, okay, a lot of companies were already doing these things. We just didn't educate others or talk about them in a way where we understood the information we already had on our plate. So I definitely feel, remember, I went into one meeting where I was briefing on what this insider threat program requirement was now and where we needed to take it. And the IT professionals and the cyber guys raised their hands and were like, Sarah, we're already doing that. We're already doing that. So I failed going into that meeting, being like, wow, if I only took the opportunity to go and have those conversations before I stomped in that room and had, you know, what I thought was a great presentation, teaching folks about something that was newer in our industry, that was more standardized now, I should say. It wasn't new. And I looked like, okay, you know, these people were like, what is she asking for? Like, what are we going to do here? And so it definitely made me realize that with any change that we have in our requirements or maturity that we're bringing within to our programs, whether government or commercial, is really understanding what we're already doing before we make a presentation like that, knowing what our capabilities are, what our restrictions are, knowing what our counterparts are doing. So you don't look like you have egg on your face when you're walking out of that room presenting a new requirement or a new program that you have to roll out.
Yeah. Well, we've all had a little egg on our face. That's for sure.
Yeah.
That's making omelets, or I'm sure there's a 50 quote there that you could add in, but that's par for the course. And thinking about, okay, we're doing these things. Obviously, we're trying to get people to work together. We have an idea of what our shared mission is. I want to talk a little bit about performance. And specifically, one of the things I certainly have noticed, I'm sure you have too, is there are a lot of folks outside of security who perceive security fundamentally as something that they have to do. It's unpleasant. Wouldn't do it if we didn't have to. It's an annoying thing. You know, all the things that we've heard 1,000 times about it being a friction cost. And I think for those of us who are a little bit closer to it, we realize that there's a lot of value that it can deliver for the business that actually advances it forward in a meaningful way. And you want to call that ROI? You can call it a lot of things. But I want to get your perspective on how you think about security, how you overcome those kinds of objections. And when I say ROI, how does that translate it for you and your organization? And how do you communicate that internally?
Yeah. I mean, my entire career, except for a couple pockets here or there, I've been considered an overhead expense, right? I'm not something that has been direct bill. I'm not making revenue for the organization. So how do I tell my leadership that I need more than one individual for this program, or that I need a certain tool to be brought in to develop it? And it's really the strategy behind it. Understanding that, as you said, security lies in so many different areas. And if we are able to see that and to make that alignment early on, you can build out a program with efficiency that reduces your risk, but also brings that return on investment, because you might not need as many individuals to roll something out if you're bringing in the right tool or the right software to help supplement your program. If you don't understand all of your expectations up front, then it's hard to deliver that to your leadership. I think, you know, we're in a technology-driven world now. We've talked a little bit about cybersecurity and how it really does play into our program now. And we have an obligation to meet so many compliance standards as part of our program. So how do we manage all that, right? And I think the part of it is really looking at the applications that you can bring in to give that landscape out to your leadership, and then to show how you are going to improve operational efficiency. I think that, you know, we do so in so many different ways, but if you have streamlined processes, if you have that rinse and repeat that you have confidence in, that you might need to customize for certain customers or agencies, but really all in all, it works out well. It's going to optimize what we're doing from a workforce standpoint. It's going to reduce any potential downtime on big contract wins or transformations that we're looking at doing. And then it's going to boost your customer confidence, right? Security is a great marketing tool. I used to go out to most all of my government site locations on a monthly basis. I had no security matters to discuss. We had a great program, nothing of concern, but I would make the opportunity to go talk to my contracting officer to build that relationship and understanding that my company that I was representing at the time really did invest in security. And it wasn't because we were giving them something additional. It wasn't because we were going maybe above and beyond in certain areas, but we were having the conversations to show that we cared and it was a priority. So being able to leverage security and that aspect to build your customer confidence is really a marketing tool in and of itself. Again, especially if you look at the landscape that we have today, to have that cohesive message about what your organization's trying to accomplish for security. I also think we're an enabler in the sense that we can help shape business opportunities. If we know what our company's wanting to do down the line, we can give guidance up front from security of, okay, here's a money pit, right? Maybe with the road you want to go down, or here's how you would shape this opportunity that would benefit us best as an organization. Security requirements and compliance requirements do drive a lot of that. If we have that opportunity to kind of get in there and help shape it, all of it is a return to the organization because it's doing work that needs to be done, but through really easy means. I think, you know, if we're looking at the kind of the tangible and intangible returns that we want to give to our company, all of those things really do play into it. We can be the catalyst for growth in certain areas. We can bring that operational efficiency, and then it adds to that risk mitigation and risk profile. A lot of companies really want to know, okay, what are we looking at today? And if you can be a part of that conversation and you understand enough about your organization, all of that is returned to your leadership, returned to your company about what you're doing. You know, so how do I do that? I really start to look at what am I asking for when I come to any organization, or what is the environment that I'm dealing with? You really want to have clear expectations on initiatives that you have going on. So, you know, kind of going back to those silos, right? It could be that my cybersecurity team is working on certain things, or my facilities team is working on several things. I want to understand that, because how does that play into the initiatives and the business goals that I have going on? And then how are we measuring our success? How are we measuring our outcomes here? And how are we presenting that to leadership? So metrics is really important. So, you know, if we want to talk a little bit about the tool that we use from Sign-In Solutions, signing compliance allows me to do that, right? It gives me the opportunity to have my clear objectives, to be able to measure my outcomes. I have my dashboards, and it's not a huge lift on me to be able to pull that information, because it's all right there in one location that I can then bring back and show my leadership. And being able to expand the value of that in my company has been what I've been working on over the last year. It plays into even the programs where you might not necessarily have security clearances, you know, suitability, positions of trust, or even folks being issued other government assets. You want to track all of that because it plays into the program. So being able to dish out reporting and metrics to me is how you show that success of how things are really working, because we don't need as many lawyers fixing things if we've kind of done things in the forefront and understand where we are and what we're doing for the company.
When you get into metrics, what are some of the metrics that you think security leaders need to pay more attention to? I mean, and it could be to advance the business, or it could be risk-related metrics that are more defensive, I guess I'll put it that way. What are the ones that you spend a lot of time thinking about?
So I think for me and in personnel, it's really understanding processing times or workflow timeframes to be able to say if we're going to transition this large contract, my estimated man hours for support is this, and this is what it will look like. If we're saying in a proposal, you can have all folks on contract within 5 business days. If we don't communicate that 5 business days is not that government agency's average, or I don't have the proof to say it, then we can't either go shape it pre-RFP with our customer and say, okay, we get your expectation, but here's what your agency is trending, then we're kind of dealt with something that we can't manage. So being able to provide that to our business development and operations folks, I think, is key. It's the first questions that typically my recruiters ask as well. You know, Sarah, how long is it going to take to clear this person, to clear this individual, get them out on site? I think the other part of that is the risk profile, right? Being able to show our risks and then any trends that we're seeing as an organization. I think the importance of the security program is to have conversations to ensure that we're doing preventative measures as well. It's really a strong partnership with HR. If we're seeing some of our employees with trending risks in a certain area, well, what are our benefits that we can start to communicate out to employees? What are some of our programs that we can start to talk about more? If we're seeing a tick in security incidents from the cyber side, okay, well, what messaging can we do there, right? I think that being able to have that at your fingertips and preventatively message and train is very important as well. So those are probably the two that I focus on the most.
Yep, absolutely. And I imagine that in the many acquisitions that you had to go through, that those things probably came up on a regular basis. Just trying to align the things, which does tee up the next topic, which is M&A. So
yeah.
Before we even get there, I just want to remind everybody, you've been through what, 10 of these things? Is that right?
Yeah.
I thought I'd been through a few, but I think that that's got to be in the top 10% for sure. What are the two or three things that that's taught you in general, not necessarily about security, but in just going through tenant merger integrations, what have you learned as a leader and a security professional?
Yeah, I think embrace uncertainty and ambiguity as you're going through the process. You have to be willing to understand that M&A activity can be unpredictable, right? You can plan as much as you want to plan. You can have all these great flow charts or, you know, whatever you're putting together for that, but you're going to have unexpected issues that are going to arise. It could be regulatory hurdles. It can be culture clashes, but you have to be willing to embrace that and then make informed decisions as you're working through that. You have to find a little bit of clarity, even though it may not be fully visible at the time, in what you're doing to move it ahead. I think the other part to it is communicating with purpose and empathy. When you're dealing with M&A, there is a lot of individuals that you are interacting with, whether from the company that acquired you or the company being acquired. There's a lot of emotion that goes into it that a lot of people don't talk about. It is a very trying time, I think, for both sides, as you know, it's exciting for the company that acquired you because it was a goal and they want to grow and they want to have this happen quickly so they can then move on to kind of where they're looking to go with that new capability being brought in. But for the receiving company, it can be uncertainty as to what does it look like for you and your job? What does it look like for the organization? What's going to change? Are my benefits going to change? Or is my flexibility going to, like, you know, all those little things, right? And I think outside of security, it's being able to communicate during M&A is so important. And frequent, honest updates to the folks that you're working with. If you don't know what is going to happen, don't meet them with something that is not transparent, because it is a trust building exercise as well. So as you're going through, staying calm and staying focused to be able to build that trust, to show the individuals through the process that, you know, why you're here and what the purpose is, it's helpful to make it successful. For me, I was also, not only was I acquired, but I worked a lot of my own integrations as well. So that can be challenging because I automatically moved into the new position within the new company. So how do you manage that with all the new teams and all the new folks that you're dealing with? You want to understand the fears, the concerns. You want to listen and be able to provide that support, but also meet your goals into that integration. So I think all those things have definitely helped me through the years being able to do so successfully.
Yeah. Yeah. That's super interesting. One of the things that I learned when we were acquired, these things are pretty confidential. You have to keep quiet for a variety of reasons. It's often the executive team and a handful of others, maybe. I did notice that one of the first people that I disclosed our acquisition to, or our intended acquisition before it occurred, was our security manager. I'm just curious if that's been your experience as well, where you as a security leader needed to be brought in early because of the sensitivity of what these companies are doing can move smoothly. Because in the reality, this does introduce material security risk when you're jamming two companies together.
Oh, absolutely. So I'd say, you know, kind of all the things we've talked about before of how I present myself into an organization, how I build a trust of leadership, that education piece really did help. If the light switch wasn't already on, flip on the light switch to realize that security needs to be a part of that conversation. That while, yes, it's highly sensitive and they want to keep it close hold, just having me in the room to listen in, to be able to raise my hand if there was something of concern, or to assist with due diligence or run due diligence for security, which I was able to do at some locations, is really important. I think that if we're not part of those conversations, it's going to lead for headache on the back end, because there's a lot of things that we outside of security don't think about, right? That could bring an issue or could bring a complexity to that integration. They think, oh, we just acquired this, so everything's going to be this way. It's not necessarily thought of, do we need contract novation? Are we going to have to work with Department of State on registration for our ITAR compliance program? You know, do we have conflicts of interest? We now need to deconflict between our awarded contracts. Things like that, that really security, because, you know, again, I'm reading the RFPs, RFIs, executing the contracts, executing the positions, know a lot of information that we're able to give valuable conversation to. I've had a lot of companies pick some really cool code names for these M&A activities, which is always fun, right? Like, how do you make this stressful time fun for the company? That's been a great part of it for me, to have leaders that bring that little bit of levity. I also think, you know, if you have to navigate a foci M&A, that is
big deal.
Challenging, all hands on deck for weeks on end. If you have to deal with CFIUS and the CFIUS process, which I have done, you become really good friends with your coworkers on all the information you have to pull together. And if you are preparing for that in advance, if you know you have a five-year plan for your company where you either want to sell or you want to acquire, that's legwork you can be doing up front. So again, there's value in bringing security into the conversation. And hey, secrecy is the name of our game. So being able to bring us into those quieter, small-grouped, close-hold conversations, it's what we do. It's what we do very well. So to have that trust from your leadership to be brought in is a game changer.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, I mean, I had firsthand experience with, in our case, it was a couple of customers who remained nameless, but it was foci related. And it was companies that didn't have the majority of their business in defense. Like, it was, they were doing their thing. They wanted to acquire rapidly, and they didn't really fully appreciate just how much can go sideways if you buy a company and actually complete the transaction without doing all the due diligence and appropriate homework related to foreign control. You can lose all your contracts. You get everything suspended for a while. So if anybody's listening, probably call the security team first, make sure they're in due diligence. Sounds like you know that backwards and forwards, because the consequences can be very real.
It kind of goes to the importance too of your relationships outside your company. Do you have a good relationship with DCSA? Do you have a relationship with any of your intel agencies that have a different security program? Do you have one with DOE? I mean, there's so many different aspects or customers that are involved in that. If you have those relationships with those agencies, you can say, hey, if this happens, what does this look like? And you get that transparency back, right? Because the government doesn't want the headache either. They want to be able to work with you, and they want that partnership. You don't always have to go in and share everything. But if you have that conversation up front to be like, okay, if we're doing this, what does it look like? It is so much easier with my government counterparts. It's been a lot less hectic than it could have been.
Excellent. Awesome. Well, it's neat that you've got those stories, because it's, you know, a lot of hard knocks. And I'm sure you learn a lot of the rest of the business that you might not otherwise know.
Just oh, yes.
All right. It's time for some rapid fire questions, Sarah.
Okay.
These are fun.
Let's go.
Short, pithy answers to quick questions. What is one word that comes to mind when I say CMMC?
Lack of sleep. That's not one word. Fatigue.
Fatigue sounds about right. I feel like we've been working on it for 10 years.
Yes, it has been a lot of back and forth, waiting for it to happen. It was exhausting when it finally became final. And now to get through the hurdle, I'm with an organization that we successfully managed to get our level 2 certification.
Congratulations. Good job.
Thank you. It was a lot of work.
What is the most underrated skill for security leaders today?
Communication.
Good one. Favorite tool or framework not named Sign? Obviously, it's Sign In Solutions. I mean, I know already.
Yeah.
Other than Sign In Solutions, what is your favorite tool or framework?
Ooh, It's a great question. I don't bring in a lot of tools to my security program. So Cylance Solutions is for sure on top. We actually just expanded with a visitor module as well at my organization because I like to bring in tools that have connectivity. You're able to kind of pull it all from one. I would say outside of that, Smartsheets to manage some of my projects.
You know, you wouldn't be the first person who'd said Smartsheets. I'm a fan. I get it. That's awesome. What's the best leadership advice you've ever heard?
Oh, be humble.
Love it.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. All right. Last one. If you were not in security, what would you be doing?
Oh, I'd be a teacher. That's a rich. Really? Yes. Yes.
Oh, man.
I originally actually wanted to go to college to be a teacher. I had a youngest sister. She had a disability. She had Down syndrome. And so I was witness to her through her kind of school journey, not always getting the support that she needed. So I said to myself, I'm going to go and be a special needs teacher to be able to provide that. She also, you know, navigated cancer and I lost her at the age of 18. So her impact on my life and kind of seeing what she did, I was like, that's what I want to go be. I pivoted, obviously. I'm in security and I love it. But once I retire, I would 100% go and be a teacher.
That's fantastic. Well, you know, if you do retire, we probably could use a few more great ones. So go do it.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. All right. Well, I will give you the last. This has been a wonderful conversation, and I really appreciate you taking the time to do it. And I'll give you the parting words. What's the one thing you want everybody to take away from this conversation to sort of sum up the arc of the many topics we've discussed across your background and your expertise?
Yeah, I would say, you know, security isn't the group that's going to tell you no. I think that if you look at security as the group that is willing to work with you, that wants to have the understanding about what's going on while also meeting our requirements, you know, that's how I want to market security or insider threat programs, whatever I might be managing within an organization. I would ask that don't go to security because you're fearful of what you're not going to get. Go to security to see the possibilities of what you can get.
Awesome. Great advice. Well, thank you again, Sarah. It's been a delight. I'm sure people can follow you on LinkedIn if they find you, Sarah Still. And yes. Would love to have you back again one day, back on the podcast. This has been a delight. Thank you for taking
time. Let me know when, John. I'll be there.
Awesome. Take care.
All right.
Thanks for joining us on Secure Access, brought to you by Cylance Solutions. If you found today's conversation insightful, be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your network. For more on transforming compliance, security, and workplace experiences, visit cylancesolutions.com. Until next time, stay secure, stay informed.